questions on assignments 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8. Yes, sir. How you draw something in a canvas. That's your question? Yes. Okay. I can do that. Oh, there you are. I knew I saw you. Well, I'm just about to quit handing things out, and then I see someone else. It's right here. I have something of yours, don't I? No, maybe it's just an email I saw from you, something I saw recently. Maybe it was something I wrote. Maybe you sent me an email and I wrote something back. Could that be it? Yeah. Or day before yesterday, yeah. Okay, and can you mail this back to Mr. Wright? He's at the end of the line here. Okay, so the question is, how do I draw something somewhere? What's that? It's colored gooey stuff that you put on the walls. But this is that's a method that is called, under various circumstances, and we were going through the mysteries of this method being called last night, trying to make it behave itself. The paint method gets called by what? The runtime engine, remember? The Java virtual machine calls the paint method. You can actually call it yourself if you, that is, you can make up your own paint method and use a graphics. Where did you guys see a graphics that wasn't the one being handled by the runtime engine? You guys just saw one. In the Goofy program, remember I had the flickering version and the non-flickering version? In the non-flickering version, I went out and created an image. And then I requested that the image give me its graphics context. I called get graphics. So I actually had a graphics context that I could draw in. And I could have made up my own paint method with that argument, called paint with that graphics object, in which I did. Actually, I did. I used both. I used the off-screen graphics from the image, and then I copied it over to the on-screen graphics. This G here is the on-screen graphics. It's the one that the system is using to paint the picture. Okay? Something I didn't mention is that there is another method called update. And update, the default version of update called paint. So those two methods work in conjunction with one another. And what you do in the update method is your business. And then what you do in the paint method is your business. If you don't do anything, then there's a default version that's just called paint. Right. Update is what is actually called by the runtime engine, and then it, in turn, calls paint. And if you don't call these, How would you call it if you wanted to call the paint method? What do? You can't call the paint method directly because you don't have access to the graphics context directly. How do you call it indirectly? The repaint method sends a message to the operating system, which is a virtual machine for Java, sends a message to it that says, call update, call paint. But something that you guys should be aware of, you will become sensitive to it as you go along, is that just because you tell the virtual machine to do something doesn't mean it's going to do it when you want it to do it. You can give it hints. When we look at garbage collection, if you look at the inner classes handout, which is on the website, it discusses garbage collection, and you can actually call system.gc, which says go out and, you know, recover memory. But it's just a hint. The runtime engine does what it wants when it wants, based on some rules that people built into it. But that sends a hint to please call my update method and my paint method. Okay. Is this making some sense? If you do things like cover up a window and uncover the window, that sends a message to the system to repaint. You don't have to tell it to please repaint my window. It does it for you automatically. But something that you guys saw the other day with the Goofy program is that if you cover up half of something, like the canvas, and then you uncover it, the system only repaints the part that needs to be painted. It doesn't repaint everything. Yes? Well, you can write your own repaint method, but you have to be careful because the built-in repaint method, which you would be overriding, sends a signal to the system to call update, and your repaint method wouldn't. Yeah. Yeah, if you go out and get the graphics context, then you can do these things all on your own. Right, exactly. And sooner or later you'll be doing that. That's what's going on with the, if you guys have looked at the Javaroids program, you haven't had a chance yet. If you look at the Javaroids program, that's what he does in there to keep the circles moving and so on. Because he's actually manipulating the graphics context. Okay, in any case, this is just, all of the components have this pair of methods available to them. Most of the time, you, like with a button and whatnot, you don't do anything to change what it's doing. But for a canvas, for a frame, and so on, you're going to want to be changing the way this works and what goes on. Last night in the program that I showed you, called what? The one that displayed the image, you saw that all of the work in that program, in the Goofy program, was being done in the paint method. That yesterday or the day before yesterday, whenever it was, that's where the work was being done. In the non-flickering Goofy program, the code was actually implemented in update and paint. Update said draw the off-screen image, paint said display it. So they were working in conjunction with one another. One of the things that you should be aware of, because the system only repaints the part of the window that's been covered, is that at times you will want to change everything in a canvas, for example, or whatnot. Then what you will do is you will fill the canvas with a rectangle, which is the same color as the background color, and then draw on top of that. What that does basically is it erases it and then redisplays it. So, dot, do something. Okay? All of the draw methods are in the graphics class. For like drawing a line or whatever. How would you draw a line? Draw a line. How would you draw an image? And so on. Okay, there was also the fill oval, and I think there's a fill rect. I forget all of them. When I need one of these things, I do what? I just look. I type G dot, and then it gives me a list of the methods along with their arguments. Okay, let's say I want to draw a string on a canvas, and that's G dot draw string. And then I give it a string. One of the things you really have to be sensitive to is this paint method gets called automatically and at unpredictable times. Well, they're vaguely predictable. But as far as your program goes, it's unpredictable when it's going to be called. So if you try to use a string that hasn't been initialized, for example, you're going to get what? A null pointer exception when you make that call. Yeah? How would you do what? You write this. You put the code you want in the paint method. This is the paint method you get for free. Doesn't do anything. And then what you do is you override the one from on high. So, you have to make sure if you're going to paint something, if you're going to paint an image, if you're going to paint a string, anything which is an object that's being displayed, you have to put a test to make sure the object isn't null. That is, it's been initialized. Then, and X and Y are something you provide. Right? Yeah, because you start up your program, you make a new frame, and it may paint the frame before you put anything into the string. Or paint the image before you put anything in the image. And then it'll give you an error null pointer exception. Usually the program keeps running, but it's unsightly. And I forget there's some other arguments. I forget. Once again, when you need them, G dot, and it shows you what the arguments are. Shows you what the functions are, shows you what the arguments are. Usually it's a place where it starts and how wide it is, and the target, which is normally this. This being what? The component you're in. Okay? And you can, any drawing you want, you put it in there. Anything you want to do before you draw it, you put in upgrade. Yes, sir. Well, the paint method is in the frame of choice. Every frame has a paint method. Then you write your own paint method in there, and you do. I'll show you some examples of that, because that's what we're working on right now. Right. Yeah. Whatever you do in the paint method will be called automatically. If you cover the one of the things that we were doing with as an experiment last night. To make sure that the paint method was actually doing something was I covered the window and uncovered, and then the window got painted automatically. So we knew something was happening, we just didn't know when or why. So, and I forget what we did, we kludged around it and forced it to behave itself. And I don't actually understand why one trick works and another doesn't, but the tricks seem to work. So. Yeah.
United in the last United States, the big goal in United States, and paint, is it not the city of the
old? If you call repaint.
Automatically.
Yeah.
So if you use the green wireable, somehow assign it to the other wireable?
Yeah, but it's not easy to get to. What you'd have to do to get to it is you would have to have a local G equal G, and then you can do things in it. Right. But then you have to call repaint to have it then actually go to update and paint. Yeah, you could make your own function and you could actually manipulate the contents, and then this one here gets called automatically to do the display. But yeah, you could go fiddle around with the graphics context. It's not totally hidden, it's just hidden in terms of calling paint, because this has come from the system's control rather than your control. And you can also do the off-screen graphics, that is, you can just make your own graphics and manipulate it and then copy yours to this one. That's what we did in the Goofy program, was basically it was just copy area from the off-screen graphics to the graphics for doing animation. And I have another animation program that I'll show tonight. And some sound. Someone, you wanted sound. So I'll show some sound. Well, I won't show it because it's invisible, but you can hear it. I'm sure there are. Then you could see your sound. But I don't have one. That threads is one of the places where animation is one of the places where threads are useful. What's a thread? This is a test. Yes. It's a process. Thank you. So it's a process that's running. What's that? Well, it's like, computer people don't do anything complicated. All right? Everything computer people do, computers only know how to do three things. They can move bits from one place to another. They can do some very simple arithmetic and logic, the arithmetic being based on some very simple logic. And they can repeat themselves ad infinitum so that it appears as if something has happened. Okay? So, computer people stuck with this and still wanting to get PhDs have to invent fancy words for otherwise totally trivial activities. So, instead of, they used to call it process, and people were baffled by that for a while, but people caught on, so then they changed it to thread. Once people catch on to that, they'll change it to something else.
It's kind of like physics
and the spin
theory.
All right, same old stuff, only did you guys notice the article on Stephen Wolfram, who basically, I guess he wrote, you know who Stephen Wolfram is, the guy that wrote Mathematica? He was a Caltech physics guy, and then he went on to greater things when he was 21. I know, shame on him, huh? It's like that kid I had in here who wrote that program with all the objects. In any case, he wrote a little book that basically says that the whole universe is based on some really trivial rules that anybody can figure out. And so, yes, I guess you'll have to read it, and then you can skip everything else, because you'll know it all at that point. He's a clever fellow. He gave me my first copy of Mathematica. Wasn't that generous? I didn't... Yes, sir. The threads, right. Every thread has its own independent path of execution. However, there are two kinds of threads. There are daemon and user threads. One kind is a background process that runs independently, and the other one is a process which is actually attached to the main process. In the one case, when the main process goes away, the thread goes away at the same time. In the other case, when the main process goes away, the thread keeps processing until it reaches its own end. You guys have noticed already when you make a window, your program is over, right? If you look at main, you go main A6, you create a window, you do this, and then the program is done, right? Except the window is still there. So the window has actually taken on a life of its own. Remember that window we made and we couldn't get rid of the darn thing? Yeah, it took on a life of its own, independently of the rest of the program. So threads are like that. So you can create these threads, you can create multiple processes, and then you can have them actually persist long after your program is completed. And threads are very useful for doing things like, let's say you have a chat room or something like that, where you want the process to be listening at a TCP/IP socket, for example, and testing it over and over again, but you don't want it to use up all your system resources. Or you have a tight loop like that Javaroids game, where the circles are moving around on their own, but you don't want them to be updating and interfering with everything else that the machine is doing. It's very easy to write a program in Java with a small loop where you have a loop in this object waiting for something to happen in another object, and it uses up all the system resources, so the other object never gets a chance to do anything because you're busy spinning in a loop here. Now, you're protected from that somewhat by the operating system, because operating systems nowadays have time slicing, right, where they have this what's called preemptive multitasking, where you get many jobs going at the same time, and one can start and stop other jobs based on a priority system. But the operating system actually maintains control and says, I will give you no more than 10 milliseconds. And then I'm going to give 10 milliseconds to the next, no matter what's going on. Okay, that kind of time slicing. So that protects you a little bit, but you can get into a situation where your Java program basically takes over the computer and you're inside of a loop, and you don't have a way to get outside the loop because nobody else gets a chance to do anything. Basically, threads have a method in them. Threads, and there are two ways to get a thread. One is to extend the thread class, and the other one is to implement runnable. If you implement runnable, you're responsible for creating a run method. And the run method is the code that actually executes the thread. When the run method is over, the thread is done. Okay? If you extend thread, then you get a run method, and then you're going to put code into it that does what you want to do, because otherwise it won't do anything. That's the one you get from the thread class, is a run method that doesn't do anything. You override it. Okay. So, threads. When run is complete, they're dead. Well, you can have a thread sleep. You can have a thread wait. You can have a thread yield, and you can have a thread call I.O. Some kind of, write to the disk, read from the keyboard. Okay? These are basically the ways that you give up control of whatever you're doing so that someone else gets a chance if you have a process running. So we can look at these. Sleep. You just tell it in milliseconds, how many milliseconds to sleep, and when you're done sleeping, you go back to the ready state, and then you get to run whenever the operating system says you can run. Wait. Let's say you're in a tight loop, waiting on something. You call the wait method, which basically says, I'm waiting on something, so anyone who wants to run a program now can go ahead and run it until I am notified. There's a notify method.
That's essentially a loop in itself.
Yeah, it's a loop in itself, but it's the runtime engine that's maintaining the loop rather than your program. When you call wait, wait is a method. When you call wait, you say, put me on the back burner until someone tells me otherwise. And if it's forever, it's forever. So you're not in a loop. You're not in the thread anymore. You gave up control to the operating system. Every one of these is giving up control to the operating system.
It's still consuming
CPU time. No, it's not, because the operating system says, you're waiting, go by. Well, the operating system is, yes. The operating system is consuming it no matter what you do.
Oh, it's consuming more because of that.
Yes, it is. There is a very small amount of overhead associated with that because it goes through all of the processes that are on its schedule, and it says, is this process busy? Is this, is this, is this? So, yes, every single process will at least consume the amount of CPU that it takes to check to see if the process is active or not. That's why operating systems have some limit on the number of processes they can run, because if you get more than a certain number of processes, the CPU spends all its time checking and none of its time working. So even on Unix, you can run processes, but if you go and build a kernel, one of the things you set is how many processes can be active, which is nowadays an enormous number. Okay, but these are different conditions where you're not running. Okay, so if you call yield, all that says, it says, well, you know, go out and look and see if anyone wants anything. No one busy? Run me some more. Okay, and then I.O., you issue a call to I.O., I.O. complete. Run me some more, because usually disk access and that kind of thing is very slow compared to program instructions. Right? Wait and notify is done. You can see this is in pairs, which means basically you have some part of the program, some process, is waiting on another. And this wait-notify pair, I'll show an example, gives rise to synchronized methods. Synchronized methods, or blocks of code, it's not just a method, it's a block of code between braces. most commonly method, but you can also have a synchronized, just a block of code, which I think they have an example in the book of a bank clerk who are handling lines of customers, and one is doing something, and then they pass the work on to the next, and so on, but they have a limit to how many jobs they can have. And it's a pretty complicated example, actually. There's a mechanism in Java which basically says if this method is being called by another object, nobody else can call it till it's done. It's just like the idea in databases. When you have databases with record lockouts, when one person is busy with the record, no one else can update that record or access that record. Then when the record has been rewritten or updated, then someone else can have it. That way you don't have two people, oh no, booking the same seat on the airplane. Oh, that happens anyway, but that's a statistical problem, not a... Yeah, so there's a synchronized keyword which says this method can only be accessed by one object at a time. So I'll show an example that shows that. Okay, sleep, you can just call sleep. Thread, this is a static method, so you can call thread.sleep 5000, and your program will just wait for 5 seconds. It'll just stop, and then it'll start up again. And that, in fact, if you look in Javaroid, the program has a sleep in it where the program basically goes to sleep so it doesn't update too fast. Otherwise, it becomes very hectic to try and play the game because the circles are going here to here to very high rate. Okay? So, the important thing is there is no ready method. Ready simply means that I will run if you ask me to. The run method is under the control of the virtual machine, and the run method starts when you call object.start, which is whatever is the thread object, and then that run method keeps getting called, checked by the operating system to see, is it ready? If it is, you can execute some lines of code. If it's not, for one of these reasons, put it back on the back burner and wait till it is ready. Then run some more code inside it. That's exactly what your multitasking operating systems are doing anyway. Java just has some specific mechanisms for doing some control yourself, so you can set, for example, a priority for your threads between 1 and 10 to say I'm really an important thread or I'm a really unimportant thread. You can say run me in the background or attach me to the process that spawned me. In one case, you're done when that program is done. In the other case, you keep running even after that program is done. For example, your print spoolers and so on, your TCP/IP listeners have a life of their own. You all know about TCP/IP, right? Sockets and listeners. I'm sure you've all heard of it anyway, huh? So one of the things we do in advanced Java is we actually write a little chat room where you can have a conversation going on your computer and you can connect it to any other computer anywhere on the planet that wants to cooperate. And we tested it on kind of an international basis where everybody who knows somebody somewhere else, which is almost everybody in Glendale, get someone to cooperate, and then we can have a chat. Only problem we have is that somebody has to get up early or stay up late to cooperate. Okay. So I'll show you a little thread example. I will show you a, let me just tell you about the thread example, because as usual, after the break, it's going to be hectic in here. And I'll show you an animation example which uses a thread. I will point out where the thread is in Javaroid, and then we can also discuss the paint method and how it works, because it's all connected. In any case, the thread example has a startup class. The startup class creates a producer thread and a consumer thread. So it starts up two threads. It also creates a hold class, and this hold class is synchronized, meaning it has methods in it that can only be accessed by one thread at a time, one other object at a time. So, the idea behind the program is the producer produces a number. When the number has been produced, the consumer consumes it. Okay? The consumer has to wait until a new number shows up. So, the consumer waits until a producer produces something, then the producer waits until the consumer consumes it, because there's only room for one. This is like a table that only has room for one thing on it. So the producer can't produce anything until the consumer. Well, you can see if you write a program like that, you can get yourself into a jam if this and this are totally independent of one another. Because this could be producing things, and they'd be falling off the table because there isn't room to have them, and this could be consuming things asynchronously, and it would be getting like every other one. It would be like one of those comedy movies where the assembly line is going too fast. Okay? So, this is a thread, that's a thread, this is a synchronized method. This thread waits on that one waits on this one, and they take turns. This one gets the first turn, for obvious reasons. Okay? So it's a very simple little program, but it's just complicated enough to demonstrate that this thread stuff works, and also that synchronized works. Where the program in the book is so complicated, so fast, it's toward the end of the book, it's the bank operation program. It gets so complicated so fast you have no idea what's going on. Unless you study it long and hard. We don't have time in here to do that. Okay? So, what we'll do is we'll take a break. This machine is going to work tonight, so it's going to be a shortish break because we have several things to do here. I mean, several different programs to look at their features. And then we will go upstairs and press on through the fog on 6, 7, and 8. Has everyone done 5 now? Pretty much. Yeah, I have yours. Well, stop playing with it. It's not time to play with it. It's time to do 6 now. Well, you can do 5, 6, 7, and 8 all together. So you're really, yeah. Everyone's doing. Oh, and the sound example. Yeah, I'll start with the sound example, then I will do the thread example. Okay, we'll do that. Thanks for reminding me. I had forgotten. I know there's more than one person that wanted sound. Okay, so this is a very simple little program that demonstrates it. And in this case, I only have one picture, but I have many sounds. So I can, for example, load a chicken sound, but I still have an elephant. Now, what one student did cleverly was they went and did one of those choice things where they would choose an animal, the animal would display and it would have the correct sound. What I did is I just went out on the internet and I went to one of these free sound download places, sound effects. If you type in sound effect wave file, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of sound effects that are downloadable for free. So I downloaded some sound effect files and I just got one picture because, how many pictures do you need to demonstrate an idea or sound? And I'll just show you quickly how the program is put together. And this includes painting the picture on the canvas and loading and playing the sound. Now, I should give a warning here. This is an applet. And originally, back in the old days, meaning 2 years ago, Java. What's that? What do you mean, still Netscape? Not only is it still Netscape, it's Netscape 4.78 or something. What? No, it's at 6.2 now. This is an old free copy from Netscape of yore. Why don't I use Internet Explorer, I keep people saying. Here's why. Because I'm one of those people of principle. And Microsoft has gone through a lot of effort to exclude an awful lot of software from compatibility with their software. And I say, never mind, I can't say it. If you talk to me outside, I will tell you what I say to people that do that. So I'm still waiting. I actually do use Internet Explorer in my 101 class because the students use FrontPage to make their web pages. And FrontPage is one of those products which has a lot of things in it which are incompatible with everybody else's browser, meaning this one. So I do use it in that class. So you see down here, I actually have, there's the Explorer icon. But in general, I shun exclusion. I exclude exclusion, if that makes sense. What? Yeah. I don't care about anything except free and open exchange of ideas and information. Yeah. So all the rest of you who use Explorer, well, you also use Windows. See, and I use a Mac, so it just goes to show you. There's no accounting for taste. Okay, if I go here and I say Java Sound Application, it takes me to the java.sun.com, and if you go to this website, they show you how to do this in an application. And in fact, the student who did this for their assignment 7 or whatnot went and took the code from the Sun site and modified it to their ends. But my demo version works as an applet, so I just leave it that way. Okay? So, there is the code here. You should be aware of it. Java Sound Application. Type it in at the Google search and you will get top pick, which is the Sun site that gives you the downloadable code to implement your own application. However, back to this applet. Very, very simple, and in fact, the application version is equally simple to do sounds in Java. That's the whole program. This does both the picture and the sound. Okay? It's got a set of buttons, where we have a play button, a loop button, a stop button, a load button. The load button does just what we did, for our other applications. It just calls up a file dialog, lets you pick a file. If you don't pick the right file, it doesn't do anything. Then you have to pick the right file, and it does do something. Here is the implementation of sound. There is a class called audio clip. Yes. Well, it's just not used anywhere else. It's not, it doesn't have an advantage or a disadvantage. This code was written by people who followed the rules, and the rule basically says when you have variables in a class, you make them private if you're not planning on extending the class, and then you have getters and setters if you want to use it outside. If you're going to use this class as a super class over something else, you know, a hierarchy, then you would make it protected or packaged. Okay, so this is it for the sound. It's just like image. See how image is just image, image, and this is audio clip sound. I believe with the new version of Java 1.4, they actually have support for MIDI now, and they have a much more sophisticated sound interface. And you have to go to the Sun site and look that up and see how to use it. But it's, they've actually, there were so many people who wanted to do things with sound that they added a whole bunch of classes for sound support. The audio clip class supports 5 different sound formats, AU, WAV, AIFF, and a couple others. And you just tell it, when you load a sound, it figures out what the format is and makes sure that it's playable. So there's 5 different formats, and they show you the 5 formats if you go to that Sun site. Yes, to repeat, and at the expense of being ridiculed for using Netscape, if you go to this site here, they show playing sounds from an applet, and then down below here, playing sounds from an application. Okay, this is JDK 1.2. And it gives you both the code to do it, and they give you the 5 different formats. So there's a MIDI format, AU, RMS, AIF, WAV. Okay? So, the code is right there. I mean, it's very easy to cut and paste the example. Look, even I can do it. Okay, so we push those buttons. When you go to load a sound, it's basically just like get image. You have a get audio clip. That's all you have to do. You give it a file name, and it automatically figures out if it's a playable sound and loads it into the sound object. Now, when you're working with Applet, there is a call to get document base. There's a rule about Applet. Applets are not allowed to root around on the file system. So get document base basically gives you back the directory from which the Applet was loaded. That's the only place you can get to on a file system when you're working with applets. Okay? That's to prevent outsiders from going into your disk and grabbing things off your disk. So, the sound classes are implemented in such a way that you have to call this getDocumentBase, and your sounds have to be located relative to where the applet was. If you look at the Sun's application version of it, they show you once again how to adapt the application to move around freely in the directories. But it's just as easy to use a sound as an image. See, there's get the sound, there's get the image. They're both done in identical ways. The file dialog opens up and it says, you know, load it. You pick a file and it says, it loads it. And then it puts the image into image and the sound into sound. These 3 calls here are how you play the sound. Sound.play, sound.loop, sound.stop. It's as simple as that. When you want to play a sound, you call the play method. If you want to play it forever, the loop method. If you want to turn it off, stop.
Did you override loop, for example, with a series of over?
You can extend the sound class and do all of the stuff that you do in terms of, you know, timing, cutting it up, et cetera.
It's all accessible.
Right. There's nothing hidden. And I think that the new sound interface actually has a whole lot of tools that allow you to do, you know, timing and that sort of thing. Sound capture. But the old interface is trivial in the extreme. I mean, it's just like when you draw image and you get the image, this is play the sound and there's the sound. It's just magic. You don't know what's going on, but there it does. Okay, here's the paint method that we're going to just look at a paint method again. Here's the test to make sure that the image has been initialized, because what happens with an applet, the applet gets painted right away. Remember, an applet is under the control of the browser, and the browser says load it up and display it. And I haven't had a chance to push a button to have the image initialized or anything. It's going to paint the applet panel, because remember, an applet is a panel. It's going to paint it right away with its buttons and so on. So I have to test to make sure that the image isn't null. If it's not null, I initialize an X variable to this.getWidth. What's that? Width of the applet, which is a panel. So it says get the width of the applet, subtract the width of the image, divide by 2. What am I doing there? It's centering the image. See, I knew you did assignment 9 in that other class. It's exactly what we did, remember, when we had the width and the height of the window? Okay, and the same thing with the height. So I center the picture in the middle of the canvas, or the panel, sorry. And then I say g.drawImage, and there are all of the arguments, the image itself, the x and y position, that gives you the upper left corner of it, the width, the height, and the place to put it. So that's a really simple program. That's on the thing upstairs. That's also on your website. It's called Figure 14.6 because it is out of the Dital book called Java How to Program. So you can also download the code from the Dital.com website, I think, or you used to be able to. They may have changed it. Any questions on that? And I want you guys glad to see how easy it is to do sound. So you can have singing musical instruments, you can have talking chimpanzees, etc., very quickly and easily in your program. Yes, sir. Well, it's quiet when it's not playing. No, it plays. See, I can put this on loop. My program is still running. It'll still respond to the other button. Yeah, so you have to provide a little bit of your own self-control here on that one. Okay. If it can't be written, it says, wait. When it can be written, it falls through and it says, I've put a number in here, notify somebody. Notify who? Whoever's waiting. And the same thing happens here in reverse. So it's a pretty simple program that keeps two objects synchronized. And the two objects that are synchronized are threads, which actually are processes which live a life of their own. If you notice the startup class, it's done right there. It's out. You're finished. And it's not like a window that's up there waiting for you to push the close button. These threads go off and they live a life of their own. And here's what the program does. Starts off minus 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 3. Notice that the timing is sometimes fast, sometimes slow. And then it's done. And the numbers all go in sequence. So one wrote it, the other read it. Wrote it, read it, wrote it, read it, wrote it, read it. So you can go sit and look at that and you can worry your way through it. You can do experiments on it and watch it crash because it crashes very dramatically if you change things in it. Oh no, it halted way before. Watch it again. It was done a long time ago. The main program, the very first thing that happens is the main program is over. Now the threads are off and running, but the main program is done. It's not there anymore. Right? You know from your other code that you've written that it says type control C to... Yeah. Yeah, because the wait and the notify is sitting, you would be sitting in a loop, in a tight little loop inside that if threads are trying to access and it's not synchronized, it crashes, and if you have a writable, if it's always writable, the notify call can come from any object, right? You're waiting and any object can say notify, and once notify has been sent, you come out of your wait loop, and if you don't have a flag that says I'm writable or not, you go ahead and write to it, and you'd write to it out of turn. Because the two methods are independent, right? There's a synchronized method for writing and a synchronized method for reading. So the two objects could use the other method. They each have their own independent method. And what you want to make sure of is that you don't have another producer thread trying to write to that at the same time as this one. Right. Yeah. Right. It goes back to waiting. Yeah. So the operating system basically says, okay, you're on the shelf. I haven't got a notify call from anybody. So just hang tough. Right. In any case, it's a small enough program that you can do that experiment. You can try and take that flag out and see what happens. Remember also that the wait and the notify are coming from the same methods, right? So the writable flag there is basically saying don't send the notify, don't call notify until it's time. Okay, and then we will go back very quickly here to Javaroids. Javaroid?
Yeah.
It is. It should be. And it's been there for about 3 years, I thought. It's also on your thing, isn't it? No?
I don't think so.
Huh. Well, if it's not there, I'll go make sure that it is there. It used to be there. Okay, in this program, let's open it up. There is the run method for this program. Let's look up at the top. In this case, instead of it being a thread, it implements runnable. So it implements the runnable interface. And this one here has runnable interface, mouse listener, key listener, for those keys being pressed. Okay? So implementing runnable, the only thing you're required to do is provide a run method. And all of the work in this program is done in the run method. Oh, there was the show score where we were fiddling around with this. Is implementing the run method. Okay? So, all they do in run is it's an infinite loop. Now, normally, if you have a program which is an infinite loop, you have to be really careful because it will take over control of everything. So what he did to avoid that take control of everything is he called sleep inside the loop. So it turns the computer over 50 milliseconds at a time for anything else that's going on, which is really a pretty big chunk of time. Moves the objects. Calls repaint, calls the repaint, so there's two windows, remember, so he repaints this window and the other window. There's the scrolling window with the scores and all that, and then there's the window with the circles and whatnot, then the spaceship. There, one runs independently of the other. They both have a life of their own. And you, when I run the program, it's actually two windows. And this one keeps working even when I'm over here doing... So it's not the smoothest interface in town, but it's not bad for assignments 5, 6, 7, and 8. And then if you change the amount of time it sleeps, the motion of the circles either gets slower or faster depending on the sleep constant. And he did a lot of playing around with the update method and so on. Let me just show you this. Well, let's see now. This one here has nothing going on in update except to call the paint. Maybe it's in the other window. There was a place where he was. Well, you guys can go find it. Go pay attention to what he did with update in one or the other of these windows. Mainframe. Maybe it was this one. Okay, here's where he's doing the motion, the move high score, and this is the scrolling window. Okay, in any case, something else to look for in this program is the way that he decided how to design his hierarchy. Because if you think about it, the hierarchy, the asteroids and the spaceships and the little bullet thing that's just a pixel that moves across the window, all have something in common. It's like we showed with the vehicle class. He actually designed his hierarchy so that the super class is something called motion props. Anything that moves on the window is in that hierarchy. And the definition for how they move and so on, he saw that there was a commonality between how things moved and rotated and whatnot. And so what he did is he decided to make his hierarchy be based on things that move and things that don't, rather than on is it a spaceship or an alien or a... He said, there's something in common between these. When you're designing an object-oriented program, think in terms of big picture stuff, because where a person and a crocodile may not seem like they're in the same hierarchy at one level, it might be that they are very much in the same level at another area. And where it seems like a rock and a crocodile are even further apart, there may be something about them that makes it, from a programmer's point of view, sensible to put them into the same hierarchy. It just depends on what you're doing as a programmer. The nice thing about programmers is what? You can do anything you want. There aren't any rules that say this is the way it has to be done. You can do it any way you want. Okay? So, take a look at Javaroid and its threads. It uses the runnable interface. Look at the thread test. It has the extend thread class. See how those work, and then you can look up the sound example. And I'll see you all upstairs in a minute.